The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
Welcome to the One Fall Podcast. We are back this week because everything has gone crazy in professional wrestling. What a week it's been, from Saudi Arabia to NXT to Ring of Honor potentially burning to the ground. We'll see how that goes, but no Josh today, but we are joined with VG1 winner the last 2 years, Mo.
The futurist. Yeah, I know. Josh, like we usually say about him when he's not here, who needs him? Yeah. And I'm going to right now ahead of time, I'll just say this. At any point in time, my laundry could buzz. You'll either live it in and I'll apologize to the listeners ahead of time, or you'll edit it out. That'll be up to you.
I'll make the decision as we get there. But we got to start with the big story, the main story about airplanes not taking off. A bad government and Vincent Kennedy McMahon. What happens when you mix all three of those together?
This latest Saudi trip. That's what happens.
Mo, I'm going to give you the honor of explaining what is all happening with that and what we've learned as of November 3rd. Today is the 3rd.
Yes. Well, I don't have notes in front of me because I actually thought you would do this, but as you're the one who let me know about it through.
Well, I guess I will.
Listen to the latest Observer, Wrestling Observer Radio. Essentially, the vast majority of the WWE crew, both the performers, behind the scenes crew, were stuck in Saudi Arabia for a hell of a long time, and the reasoning behind it turned out to be much more nefarious, isn't probably the right word, but a lot more unusual than what the original explanation was of simple mechanical errors. And they were behind the lines for a long time, and it has caused a lot of distrust in the company, that which already had a lot of that, and a lot of ill feelings towards management, because a lot of the performers feel betrayed, because it looked like there was a heads up that this type of thing could be happening. And yet management kind of let the performers out to dry while Vince McMahon and a few other hot top stars managed to get out of there and get home. So is that a good way to put it?
Does that kind of explain it to
a large degree?
That's a fairly accurate representation. We have just gotten AJ's version of the events. And I mean, this is a thing where I think we're going to hear a bunch of different things, and I think eventually settle somewhere in the middle. But AJ said,
even before he said this, I'm just going to say, as long as the people who were there are still employed with the company, I wouldn't expect what they say to necessarily have, it would probably be a protected version of the truth, is my guess. But let's hear what you have to say.
So AJ Styles had a live stream on his gaming channel and started his first topic of discussion was Crown Jewel and his perspective of the flight delay. And here's what he kind of mentioned. There was unspecified issue with the plane, and they were originally not allowed to board something with paperwork. They had called for a refueling service, but the servicemen, they were told, had gone home for the evening. By the time this was all sorted out, the pilot was no longer cleared to fly because their shift had timed out. They were asked to find a hotel and wait for the next flight. There were no guns or anything crazy like Haas's situation. His wife had actually called him, worried about the rumors. once they finally got on the second flight home, one of the pilots sat with them in the cabin and explained there was some kind of service issue. He's not sure what happened with Vince and the Royal Prince, and that's not his job to speculate. He just wanted to go to work and do the best he can, and mentions there's a lot of good people at WWE, and they are all on the same team. He did mention finally that he missed his son's wrestling match and was very angry about that, but just happy to be home.
Yeah, like I say, a protected version of the truth. His truth without burying the company. Look, all of that sounds a little fishy. The thing is, we do know that the Saudis hadn't paid the money that was owed to the WWE. And there was a disagreement between the Saudi contingent and Vince McMahon and the WWE contingent. And very likely the fact that these people were left behind was in some way a small retaliation, just a form of intimidation that we can keep you here. And we do have people around who are members of the military, and we're not doing anything that would be a political nightmare for us to do, but we're just letting you know, don't mess with us. And Vince McMahon knew that that was a possibility, which is why he got out of there. Like, that's the way it comes across, and that there would be some sort of retaliation. And so it's just intimidation is all it is, but it's still, this is a country with a vast record of human rights violations. It would be scary to be stuck there and not know what's going on for that long. And yeah, you can't tell me that Vince McMahon didn't get out of there thinking, in case they do retaliate for the disagreement that we had, which was apparently quite heated, I'm going to get out of there right now.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. One of the things that you need to realize is that how the prince came to power is it was very bloody. He absorbed a lot of wealth just through the way he rose to power. He's worth over $1 trillion, reportedly. Mm-hmm. And this guy is not a nice guy at all. So you gotta
think.
you go back to the murder of the journalist, and you just know that alone is almost intimidation on WWE. And that's a big thing, because you sit there and you think there's a lot of guys going there because they're like, I am here to do my job. I don't have enough pull. I'm afraid that I'll get buried if I say no and go to Saudi Arabia. And they're putting themselves in a precarious situation. Every time they go over, it's a precarious situation. And it's one of those things where you can't upset the people in Saudi Arabia at all. You can't, because you will die, or things will become difficult. The way I interpret AJ, what everything AJ said, I interpret it as little inconveniences that suddenly happened. Like, the paperwork was an inconvenience. The refueling and the guy not being available was an inconvenience that could easily have been like, make it difficult for them to get home. Don't scare them, but just make them miserable trying to get home.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can actually go and look up the human rights violations that they had just in 2018. And if you're aware of that, and you're stuck there, it would scare the hell out of you if you're any normal human being. There's a massive list from 2018 alone. Yeah, it's as I don't think any of us been thinking for quite a long time that Vince McMahon is a wonderful human being, but it's really as poor a public look on him personally as I can remember in a long time, or to me.
Yeah. Here's the other thing with all this. So you mentioned the $60 million, and you talk about that, and then getting that payment maybe a few hours before Crown Jewel. We're not entirely sure when that money came in. We know that it wasn't September 30th because that's the cutoff for their report, for their investors' report.
It sounds like it was very early in the morning, November 1st.
Yeah.
So these is what it sounds like.
And the Saudis are, from what I've read and what I gathered, the Saudis don't pay on time. They're notorious for not paying their debts. So you're suddenly, they owe you $60 million. They can choose not to pay you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the other big thing with all this is that 40-minute delay for airing it in Saudi Arabia. From the sounds of it, it sounds like Vince pulled the plug until the Saudis came to an agreement, which they did mid-show. So
Again, that's Vince McMahon doing that, knowing there's likely going to be retaliation. It's one of the reasons why he got out of there. Yeah, he did that. I mean, that was where he had leverage. So he used leverage to get paid. The other form of leverage is, you know what? Don't get into bed with these people in the first place. Like that's like if nobody. This has been a bad look on WWE since the beginning, to work with this government. And the idea that if you dance with the devil, you're going to get burned, yeah. You know?
You look at it, there's a tweet online that I found interesting. I don't know how to interpret it quite. I'm not sure if it's just ribbing, but I mean, you see guys like Buddy Murphy saying never again and Andrade saying never again. And apparently a lot of talent have gone up to them and saying, we're not going back there.
I believe that's true. I believe a lot of them are saying we don't want to perform there again. And how can you force them to when, after all, you've already not allowed certain people like Daniel Bryan and Kevin Owens to not go.
Is there any reason why The Miz didn't go this time?
I don't know. Who knows?
I thought that was very interesting that he didn't go this time.
Yeah, I don't know. He's been there in the past. I'm not sure what I don't think anybody knows him. He could have had another priority, or he could have been just that he didn't want to go. Could have been that they figured they didn't need him. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. So the tweet that I had mentioned prior was it was Carl Anderson and the tweet said, looking forward to seeing who the locker room leader is on Monday, with a popcorn and a heart emoji. I don't know if that's in character or if that's taking a subtle jab at someone. I feel like there's been a lot of comments online from a lot of professional wrestlers in WWE, sports entertainers, that just seem very, very dissatisfied right now with this whole situation. I mean, I believe it was one of the members of the Revival, I believe it was Scott Dawson, liked a tweet at some point, basically someone saying, well, Vince, you left your soldiers behind and left them high and dry, and that's not what a leader does.
No, a leader leads from out front. A leader always... a true leader in a dangerous mission or dangerous situation, it puts himself in that danger first. And that way, and Vince McMahon has generally led like that. I mean, in different ways. But I mean, for instance, just little things like being willing to be humiliated on screen or do hardcore matches. He would do these things. And then it was pretty hard for you to turn him down when he asked you to do something. But this is a whole other level of, like, that stuff is easy compared to what he did here. This is real life, a real life situation. This isn't professional wrestling. This was a real life situation. When they talk about the locker room leader, that's interesting. Because, I think we already know here and feel for a long time, there isn't an Undertaker there anymore.
No.
I don't think there's anybody who has that kind of gravitas with the rest of the locker room. I don't think there's anybody who's that respected. You have to feel like a guy like that would have stood up for the guys, or would now, and I'm not sure who that person is who can stand up to management. I mean, Cena was somebody who could but never did because he was a company man. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure who that is, but I can tell you one thing. I'm pretty damn sure it's not Seth Rollins.
No, so this is kind of a side topic, but have you seen the clip and heard what Seth said about the fans?
The one with the on the
Corey Graves.
Yeah, about them. Yeah, he wanted me to cheer, or they wanted me to beat Lesnar, and then blah blah blah. Yeah, just stupid. Just another dumb take from him.
So here's the thing with Seth Rollins is he has masterfully, and I do blame WWE as well to a smaller extent. I think most of this rests on Rollins. Is once he beat Brock and he became the guy, he felt he'd become the guy for Raw. I felt as though he decided he needed to defend WWE in every way, shape, or form. So yeah. That's where he took shots at Ospreay. That's where he took unnecessary shots at Moxley. That's where he just started rattling off a bunch of stupid comments that turned the fans against him. And he's like, well, why do you hate me? I should be able to say whatever I want, and you're going to love me because you're getting what you want. And, I mean, he entered into a very stale feud with Corbin. Then he went back to Brock, which had no real nothing to it that I was like, okay, yeah, no, this was good. Their SummerSlam match was good, but it's still none of it did any rehab for the character of Seth Rollins. And the more you hear Rollins talk, the more whiny he sounds.
Yeah.
And it's like this guy. So you're like, oh, all these fans are fickle. No, you have to work for the audience. The audience isn't just supposed to give you just be like, oh, okay, this subpar product is okay, and we'll accept this.
Well, when we say this, I mean, this is one of the advantages AEW has. One of the big advantages is it feels very much like they respect their audience. Yep. And it doesn't feel like WWE does. And even this, okay, if you were to look at it and say, we are taking our performers, and we are performing on a Friday and a Monday, then we're flying to Saudi Arabia, then we're flying our guys back on a charter flight to perform live television the next day. Then come the beginning of the next week, we're flying to Europe. If you have respect for your performers, you don't put them on a schedule like that. That is ridiculous. And you can say, well, they're getting well paid for it, but that is ridiculous. More than that, though, to me, well, maybe not more than that, but equally important to that, you don't, if you respect your fans, put your performers through that, because those people in Europe are not going to be able to get the show that they should be able to get, because there's no way that those guys keeping that schedule are going to be able to perform at the level that they want to. It's so just not going to be possible.
Is Monday's show in Europe?
I don't know if it's this Monday or the following. No, this Monday I don't think it is. I think, well, maybe it is. Let's see. So that is 11. What is that? 11/4.
Yes. Yep.
November 4th, Raw. Let's see where it's gonna be. November 4th, Raw 20. We should say this 2019. while I look this up, go on to another point.
I just look at the Seth Rollins thing and I look at these little comments. You have to imagine there's got to be a lot of upset people with management right now and what they've been put through. It also makes you wonder how many guys are looking to get out of WWE and get into AEW. I mean, you look at it. So everything that happened with the Saudi led to a good SmackDown, but that's because you had NXT guys. So it basically proves that you could sub out 90% of your roster, fill them with NXT guys, and have a good show.
Well, I mean, it was only one night, but
yeah.
I think to me it proves less that you can fill in with the NXT guys and have a good show, because I mean they did have it was a pretty decent show, but I think it proves that when you don't have time to do a lot of heavy writing, you can have a good show. Because
yeah.
Vince McMahon ran this, but it wasn't as heavily scripted a show as they usually have, because they couldn't do that. I mean, the NXT guys showed up like 5 minutes before the event started.
Yeah.
Five minutes before the event started, most of them showed up. So yeah, they it wasn't a heavily scripted show. They didn't have time to do that, and it turned out to be better. Now, by the way, it is in Nassau on Monday, and then they leave on Tuesday to go to Europe, and they're there for I believe a 2-week tour. So
that's gonna be brutal. So
yeah, brutal schedule.
I think this kind of bleeds into the next topic about NXT being there. I thought Daniel Bryan versus Adam Cole was incredible. I loved Adam Cole.
Awesome
match. It was great. You made Adam Cole in one night. Tommaso Ciampa's promo was good, and I thought his match with The Miz was good. And I thought Ciampa looked like a star. I thought everyone in NXT looked like a star. But my question to you is, and we've had this conversation, but I think it's a great conversation and I want to rehash it. What does one good show mean to the ratings for NXT?
I don't think it means anything. Like and I've said this before, like maybe you might get a small bump. You might, because now you know 2.5 million people have seen Adam Cole, right? In that range. And that's maybe they want to turn around to see what he's like. But it's a hotshot angle. Hotshot angle isn't, even if you hotshot an angle and it does well, it doesn't turn the company around, because the problems with the company and the booking and the things that aren't getting people over and the reason why the people don't enjoy the show, all those reasons don't change just because you've hotshot an angle. And as far as NXT is concerned, while this show was good, there was no plans for it. Like it was just something they came up with. And now the people are leaving to go. These people are going to Europe, and the NXT people aren't. So they can't even invade NXT.
So for 2 weeks of this build, they can't.
I think it's 2 weeks. I'm not sure. Don't take me on that. It might only be a week that they're gone for. I think it's 2 weeks. It's typically 2 weeks or 10 days in that range when they go to Europe. But yes, they cannot even invade NXT. There can't be a follow-up. The follow-up has to be NXT and SmackDown on Raw this week, but as far as Raw and SmackDown going to NXT, unless it's people that go to the tour, which will be some pretty, lesser stars, they can't follow up on it.
So they're gone from the European tour dates from WWE's site. I'm just making sure that this is the right year. May 17th, 2019. They are in Austria on the 11th, France on the 12th, the Netherlands on the 12th, 13th they have Switzerland and Germany, 14th they're in Germany, 15th they're in Germany, and then the 16th they're in Germany. So okay.
The Raw is taking place, so that's 2 weeks.
Yeah,
that's 2 weeks from their. What was the first date?
The 11th.
The 11th. Well, okay. So probably. I mean, think about it. The 11th is a Monday. Maybe they can invade on this Wednesday. They can't the following week though. There can't be any follow up.
Yeah, because this is very interesting, because if you've done this angle and then there's no instant follow-up for this, you're going to lose your audience interest. And my other thing is, so what in God's name is happening with – so all the NXT build that you've done, is that all – are you asking NXT to do dual builds where part of the show is dedicated to getting over the takeover and then the other part's designed to build – to get this over? Like, this just seems like a mistake. I don't like it. I don't like it, and it doesn't seem like the right move to make.
Well, if you have a long-term storyline and you're doing it the right way, it's not a bad idea. It's the fact is that they don't have a long-term storyline. Just because they had a good show doesn't mean that it's a good idea. Yeah. And this company is lacking long-term ideas, long-term booking. And this is a great example of it, because I saw this show this last week on NXT, and I see the very last thing of Tommaso Ciampa saying he's going to war and throwing his what do you call it, his crutch down and in disgust and saying he's telling Goldie he's going to war with Adam Cole. Adam Cole and the rest of, you know, the Undisputed Era backing up in fear of him. And then at the end of SmackDown, they're in the ring beside each other, best buds.
Well, they weren't actually near each other. That was a
come
thing.
On. They're in the ring with each other.
And Ciampa was solely staring at Goldie. You watch the clip, he was staring at Goldie the whole time.
Okay. Bianca Belair is in War Games against Rhea Ripley. They were beside each other.
There were definitely little things like that, for sure. So, to get to Survivor Series and TakeOver, November 4th is from Nassau, and then the next show in the U.S. is from Philly on Friday, November 15th. So SmackDown is apparently coming back for November 15th. I can get tickets for it if I wanted.
Yeah, I think you can get tickets for all of SmackDown and Raw right now. Thanks.
Exactly
a hot ticket.
Then you've got on Monday, you're in Boston. Then you have NXT on the 20th, and then you have the previous week's NXT. And then you have Friday, the go home show for all of this is the start of the loop in Rosemont, Illinois. So basically Chicago.
So Adam Cole, you say that they put him over, but the fact is they didn't let him talk. They put him over as a wrestler, and he beat Daniel Bryan. He doesn't talk. I have trouble knowing the character of Adam Cole.
Without fear.
Yeah, well, the thing is, knowing that he sees this as a chance for great exposure, and that's why he would do it, and a selfish reason, that I can get it behind. The idea that he's protecting or fighting his brand, to me, doesn't speak true to the Adam Cole character or to a lot of these people. And again, what's on the line? You win and what? You get bragging rights? You get that trophy they had at that stupid pay-per-view all those years ago? Like,
where's the heat in all of this?
Well, that's the thing. Let's face it. It was fun to see the SmackDown guys on Raw and to see some fresh matchups. But the truth is, this company has badly misfired. And they were damned if they do and damned if they don't. But they were badly misfired putting this SmackDown product on, or this NXT product on USA head-to-head with AEW. Because they can do something like this, but what they're doing is they're actually positioning NXT as an equal brand, which sounds like a good idea in theory. But what it means is, you can't really do anything to improve. Like this last draft, we had nobody from NXT. These rosters stayed 95% the same. And we had a few changes. You can't do anything to really freshen it up. How many people are going to come from NXT? Because you can't gouge NXT now. How many people are going to come up from NXT on the night after or the Raw after WrestleMania? You can't do it now. Like that's one of the many reasons why they misfired doing this. Now they have to position this brand as an equal brand, which means that they lose the chance to add depth and freshness to the other two rosters.
And I mean, the other thing with all this is another factor is the Royal Rumble. They're suddenly like, oh, there's a magical NXT call up. It's so cool to see Adam Cole or see Johnny. This is rare and unique. Now it's, they should be a part of it. If they're equal to, then they should have a stake in the Royal Rumble. And the NXT title should be something that someone challenges for.
It should be just as coveted to challenge for as the other two titles at WrestleMania if you win the Royal Rumble.
But by the time November, the whatever day Survivor Series is, I think it's the 25th, whenever that's done, all of this goes away and none of this matters anymore.
That's the other thing. Like, they are going to Europe, so you can't even do a proper follow-up. And is this going to last longer than 3 weeks? Because if it doesn't last longer than 3 weeks, how the hell can this do anything for NXT's ratings? How can it? It's just something that hotshotted that happened for a little while. And at the end of the day, right now, most people they're available to watch TV about 4 hours a night on the weeknights. So it's about 20 hours a week that they have available to watch TV that most people will consider doing it. WWE right now is asking you by themselves to watch 7 hours, more than one third of your available time to watch their TV every week. If people start watching NXT, they'll start watching but less of the other two, because most people will say 3 to 5 hours is enough for me. For me, ideally, 3 hours is perfect. One 2-hour show, one 1-hour show like I'm getting from AEW. I love that.
Yep.
And I love wrestling, but I don't. And then at that, and give me the pay-per-views on weeks where you have the takeover. They're doing 7 hours, and then an additional 7 hours more on the weekend. 14 yeah. hours. They're asking you to devote to their product that week. That's just going to make people want to watch less during the week coming up. There's a wall. There's viewer fatigue. Viewer fatigue that hits the WWE and is going to continue to hit them going forward, which is another reason why NXT or Raw or SmackDown cannot continue to rise, or can't rise from where it is, can only continue to fall. And why AEW is a completely different product that people who don't watch the other product completely can just devote themselves to, has a chance to grow. One of the many reasons.
What have you thought? So we're about a month into AEW. What have you thought of what they've done? What are the pros and cons with AEW Dynamite?
Well, the pro was, number one, the pacing of the show is fantastic. And there's a chaotic energy to it, where it feels like anything can happen at any time. So it feels like can't miss. And they've given me a great last angle or last match at the end of every show that makes me want to see what happens next. This is all fantastic. The wrestling's been really, really strong. The crowd have been incredible. It feels important. Feels like the matches matter. Jim Ross, I wasn't 100% sure, because when he was at things like Fighter Fest and All In and these things, he felt a little out of place, but the announcing has been fantastic. He's found his groove with them. So has Shivani, who's been just awesome. It's been a really, really extremely, like, I would average, it's between an 8 and 8.5 pretty much every single week. It's not perfect. I don't like the fact that you have a guy like Darby Allin almost win the title and then you don't have him on TV for like 3 weeks. Things like that I think are a problem. I think you need to, it's tough because you need to introduce a lot of people and you got to rotate a lot of people. But little things, just to say Darby Allin will address his loss in 3 weeks, is enough to make you go, and then bring it up again next week. The announcers, Darby Allin will be back. Little things like that to keep people in the mix, I think they need to do. Like there are little things they need to do that they can improve on. But as a general product, it's the best pro wrestling product we've seen in a long time, as far as being a big league product and being well booked, well wrestled. I love it.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I have never had more people talk positively about pro wrestling than with AEW. There are people that have had no interest in watching, was out of WWE after the Attitude Era and just has never come back and checked out AEW. It's like, oh, I enjoyed it. I really like it. I've got a question for you, because I do have a couple friends that have watched it.
That seems unlikely.
I know, it's shocking that I have friends. No. Yeah. Who would have ever guessed that? You're not my friend, Mo?
No, I just use you for your podcasts.
Okay, cool. That's good to know. Establish that.
You hear that?
I heard that.
There you go. Laundry's done, folks.
And that brings us to the end of the podcast, because the buzzer went and can't go any further.
No, keep going. What were you going to say?
There are people that, friends that I've talked to that have grievances with AEW, saying that there's too many flips, no one knows how to wrestle, no one knows how to do a proper pin, that guys like Darby Allin shouldn't be getting pushed because they're too small. What do you say to fans like that, and fans that have And there are comments online about everything from AEW. What do you think of those complaints, and do those complaints matter in the long term for AEW?
Okay, so I was listening to Jim Cornette, and him going off for like a half hour on how much he hated the product the other day. I completely disagree with everything he says, but he says it in such an entertaining way, and I like him that I listened anyways. But yeah, he's just going off and just burying the product. And what I have to say to him or anybody else is, then don't watch.
Yeah.
Like, who cares? You don't like it? Don't watch. The fact is that none of what you're saying matters to the people that like it.
Yeah.
It only matters to the people that don't like it. So if you don't like it and you think Darby Allin's too small, or you think people don't do the dip pins, or you think it's too many flips and whatever, then watch WWE or don't watch wrestling. But for people like myself, and more than that, for people that don't watch wrestling and don't have these preconceptions about size and all these different things and are brand new and are coming back or have never watched, and you look at those demographics and the young audience that they're reaching, that's just amazing, just leave them alone. Let them enjoy their shit.
Yep. But absolutely, my takeaway with it is, you know, you can have critiques of it and you can watch it, but as long as for the most part you enjoy a product and you can be, if there's someone out there that loves Raw and SmackDown and wants to watch every week, then good on you. If you enjoy it, then you absolutely should go and watch it. The rule of thumb, if you enjoy something and you're not murdering or hurting someone, or causing some sort of distress in another human being, then enjoy yourself. Like, life's too short to sit around and be like, well, I have to watch WWE because, well, I have to. And I'm going to be grumpy and miserable, and I'm going to tweet about it, and I'm going to be like, this all sucks and this is stupid. At the end of the day, you can be like, I'm not watching anymore. I'm walking away and I'm going to watch something else. You watched AEW for the last month and like, this product's crap, then that's your prerogative, and go do whatever you want to do. Go watch whatever you're going to watch. It's perfectly fine.
That's perfectly fine. It's nobody saying you have to love the product. You know, it's just, and you know, nobody saying it has to be for everybody. It doesn't. But don't tell people that do like it that they shouldn't like it because of the problems you have with it. You know, just don't watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm looking here at my notes of other things to talk about.
I got one for you. Bring it. Go ahead.
I was gonna bring up what'd you think of Kenny's entrance? Because boy, I popped for Kenny's entrance.
Well, that's it. Again, it's actually one of the things that Jim Cornette was complaining about, and a lot of people are complaining about. And I'm once again going, okay, if you don't get it, then it's not for you. Doesn't mean it's bad, just means it's not for you. To a lot of people, they think that's cool, and they do understand it, and they do get it. And again, that's it. We're trying. What is wrong with the idea that wrestling can reach a new audience and be different?
Yep.
Be different than it has been before and reach a new audience they haven't reached in a long time or haven't reached before. Like, what is wrong with that concept? You know, it was cool. I mean, it was a little long for me. I mean, to last forever, but like, I thought it was neat. And you know, it's weird because actually the topic I was going to bring up to you on this was, you know, Chris Jericho challenging Tanahashi for night two of the Tokyo Dome.
And it's
very interesting that, because I think, and it comes down to the Cody angle and whether or not he should be, you know, your champion or not. But I think that this guy will still be champion of AEW, and it's a politically strange thing.
So there was a rumor that had popped up on Reddit, and the guy's been he's been somewhat accurate, but he got downvoted and he got buried, and it was like there's no truth to it. And more or less, he had said that there is currently something trying to be worked out with AEW and New Japan because Gato wants to do something and Jericho wants to do something. And Gato and Jericho are apparently very close.
They are. They knew each other back when Jericho first started wrestling in Japan all those years ago. Now, that's Dave Meltzer has said that there is nothing between them.
Yeah. The thing that Meltzer said is everything is still frosty. However, Gato would be interested in doing something. So that's the only nugget that Meltzer has put out that aligned with what this guy had put out. And I tend to lean towards Meltzer because it's Dave Meltzer. But it was fascinating because that all came out right when you saw basically the Lion logo in Kenny's entrance and Ibushi and the G1 trophy, which is what made me pop the most. The minute I saw the Lion logo and Ibushi, I jumped. I was like, holy.
But what Meltzer's saying is this is not meant as anything more than a burial of New Japan.
I don't need you. I have my friends, and you saw his friends around him, and he put a sock in the New Japan Lion, and that is essentially the way you interpret it. But at the same time, you see that, and you're like, this is kind of interesting. I don't think anything comes of this, but it's just one of those things that you kind of look at, and you go, Jericho, there's no way Jericho's coming out with the title. There's no way. But it's going to be very interesting how it's handled and how...
He can't do the job, right? Like, if he's champion still, he can't job. Like, it's just a very strange... Because there's no way All Japan, unless he's going to be there more, is going to want him to go over Tanahashi. Like, it's obviously we're a long ways away and we'll see what happens. But man, it's really strange situation.
I will tell you this. I would not put the title on Cody. It just that pay-per-view, I don't think there's value in putting the title on Cody right now. I don't. I think you have something with Jericho. Let him sit on the title for a little bit. Jericho's not hurting anyone. In fact, I think Jericho's helping elevate that title. So you just keep it on him for a bit. Have a slow build to someone like Moxley finally getting the title. But I just wouldn't put the title on Cody on November 9th.
So it's tough storyline-wise. Everything in the build says he's got to get it. As far as what's best for the company, as far as who should be the champion, it was Jericho and it is Jericho still. Plus, you don't want to be hotshotting that belt around too much. Plus, the belt is new, which is another reason why you want the first champion, whoever it was, to be champion for quite a while. So there's lots of reasons to not take the belt off Jericho, but the storyline, 100, and maybe you could make it so that that it's a longer chase for Cody. The storyline, though, is absolutely that this guy should get the belt. That Cody deserves the belt and needs the belt right now. And the crowd is way behind him. So, I mean, you know, hey, here's, like we say, they're not perfect. Here's another thing. Here's another one I don't get, another imperfection. What the hell? I do not understand why when Cody is the most over babyface in the company, including Kenny Omega and John Moxley and all these guys, he's the most over babyface in the company, why his wife insists on being a heel when she's out there with him all the time, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the things I just don't get.
It's going to be very...
Nobody's perfect.
No. It's going to be interesting to see, because if I remember correctly, they said on Twitter, and I guess they should have established this on TV, but from my understanding, Brandy's no longer going to second Cody in matches. And the
maybe,
minute
that... maybe she's not going to second him, but, and sorry to cut you off, but that thing where they had that kid who was... who pinned Cody, who was dressed like Orange Cassidy. You know, she's out there for that, laughing and smiling and whatever. So,
yeah,
I can't picture her not being out there in those situations.
It's going to be very interesting how they handle this, because this is a situation where I don't know how they're going to do this. I just
don't know why they want to do this. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it's just not the best use of your talent, and which is something they generally have been doing fantastic. But this is just not the best use of your talent to make her a heel.
No. I'm interested to see where this goes, but it's one of those rare things where you're like, I don't know if you guys are making the right call.
Yeah. Like I say, nobody's perfect. I'm sure if I thought of it, I'd come up with some more things. The thing about it is, it's not burying the product, though. Like, no. I'm not burying them. Like, I'll bury WWE because I just get so frustrated with what they do. Even you know, it's the right move to put the belt on The Fiend. But they did it now. Like, they still did it wrong. Like, yep. Everything they do, like, just, it makes me mad still, you know, because they just do things stupid. And they don't do it right even when they do the right thing. But when I'm doing it, when I'm saying it to things to AEW, it's like constructive criticism. Like, man, you guys are great. Here's little things I'd love to see you do that, for me, I think would work even better.
I think AEW has shown a track record in their early infancy that they're willing to listen to fans and make adjustments accordingly.
That's one of the reasons why I think that, like I say, they have a big advantage over WWE.
Yeah. Just for record's sake, Buddy Rogers, who was the first WWF champion, I may have put an extra W in there, he was recognized as the champion because he won in a fictional tournament in Rio de Janeiro. They seem to win a lot of those.
That's where the IC belt was.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they did that twice.
Yeah, according to now this could be wrong, but he won the tournament in a fictional tournament. This is coming from Reddit, so
I'm not 100% sure of this. I think they might be mixing up their facts between the IC belt and that one.
I'm seeing on another site saying that it was a tournament in Rio de Janeiro.
Okay.
So
that's funny then.
I'm actually going to look up Buddy Rogers and see.
Nature Boy Buddy Rogers.
He's the first ever WWF champion. So yeah. Take that for however you want to interpret it.
All right, so why did he come up all of a sudden?
The point that I was originally going to make was he's the first WWF. WF champion.
WWF.
He was only
Worldwide Wrestling Federation.
He was only champion for 22 days. So the first title reign of arguably one of the more prestigious titles. You can debate its prestige level now.
I think it's a little different. Yeah. I don't think it's an apples to apples conversation.
But I thought it was an interesting. I wanted to see how long there. The next champion, which was Bruno Sammartino, was for 2,083 days.
Yeah.
So.
He was pretty much. You know, when I watched those guys on NXT, and some of them came across incredible, some of them came across all right. Some of them I watched and I thought they're doing great, and I just feel like Vince is looking at them thinking, I got to bury this guy. And I know that Hunter was there. I remember when we were talking during the day in our group conversation, and Josh was part of that, and he said something like, oh, I heard the guys are coming up, some of the NXT guys are coming up, and my first comment was, well, I hope Hunter is there to make sure they don't get buried, which was exactly what happened. Hunter had this idea. And Hunter fought to keep them strong, that is definitely right. Vince McMahon ran the show, but Hunter fought to keep them strong. Who do you think that Vince McMahon looked at on that night and thought, I got to bury this guy?
Probably Adam Cole.
If he's that stupid, I thought Matt Riddle. I thought for sure he looks at Matt Riddle and thinks, we got to bury this guy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think Riddle's probably a guy that they'd be like, yep, let's get that shovel out. Which I think is a mistake. Vince probably got super excited at Keith Lee, but he's waiting to do a bunch of weight jokes with him.
Of course.
Cole's gonna.
That reminds me of the dumbest thing on SmackDown. When Pat McAfee, who, by the way, I don't even know why I'm supposed to associate him with NXT. When Pat McAfee says, I saw Keith Lee backstage in catering, and I asked him how big he is now. You saw him in catering? It's supposed to be an invasion angle, asshole.
That was
like the dumbest thing I'd heard in a long time. That drove me crazy. All right. Anyways, Pat McAfee.
I will say from SmackDown, you can have your Kenny Omegas, your Okadas, your Will Ospreys, but when you have Daniel Bryan and you do him right, I think he's pound for pound the best in the world. I think when Daniel Bryan is used properly and you use him to his full potential, he's the best in the world. I'm sure you will disagree with me and tell me I'm wrong, but I really believe if you use him right, he's the best. And I think there have been different moments over this year that it's just like his run with the title on the Velcro belt, him putting Kofi over, him putting Buddy over. He just how much he had the crowd eating out of the palm of his hands during his match with Adam Cole. Just it's a reminder that Brian, when used properly, could be the best.
I don't know where I put him right now. It's weird. I still don't feel like he's at the same level as he was at before, but I feel like he's getting close.
To me, the thing is, I say he could be. But he needs a longer stretch to be in the Omega, Okada, Ospreay conversation. Naito, there's probably a few other names.
Well, the same thing. And to me, this week was where Kenny looked like for the first time in a long time. Like he was starting to find his groove again.
There was
a little while there where he wasn't quite at the same level, and he looked great this last week.
I feel like the last 2 weeks Kenny's looked really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But man, Mo, is it wrong that I just want Brian out of his contract in AEW? Is it wrong? No. I want Kevin Owens, Randy Orton, The Revival, Cesaro, Luke Harper.
No, it's one of those things where everybody was talking about, again, we come back to people talking about how much they want out of the company. I'm sure a lot of them do. I mean, hey, I hate my job. I've been wanting out. I've been miserable for the last 6 months of want out. It's not so easy to just get out just because you want out.
No.
You know, like there's real life and commitments and questions and concerns and it's not so easy to even, and who knows how many of these guys could actually go to AEW. AEW says that right now they're about 85% of what their capacity is for roster. Some of them, obviously, you'd make room for. But not necessarily all of them.
No. Nope.
The nice thing is you also got TNA, ROH, MLW, New Japan America. You got places where you can probably – most of them can probably find work. Most of them.
Yeah.
NWA Power.
Yeah. I do firmly believe that the Revival will be in AEW at some point.
I absolutely positive of it. Do I think Randy Orton?
Yeah.
I don't AEW. I do not know if I look at is Randy Orton has made hints about it. Is he trying to leverage for more money?
Yeah.
Or it comes down to the thing is Randy Orton's an enigma. Despite being around for a long time, you feel like you know him a lot less than you know Daniel Bryan. As a person, you know, He feels harder to connect to and know. So it's harder to get inside his mind and to know what he's doing. Does he love wrestling? He's a third generation guy. Maybe he's made enough money and he sees this as a chance to actually have some fun and to give back to an industry that he cares about. That's possible. We don't know. Or he could just be trying to leverage himself into a better position to get more money. Or he could just be trolling people just because he's a dick. We don't know. And it's really hard with that guy to figure it out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you're Tony Khan and you're sitting there, and Randy says, hey, I'm interested. Do you take Randy Orton?
If I'm them, you know, I have to say I'm kind of – now, number one, like I said, SmackDown, I probably didn't love it as much as a lot of people. It was a good show, but I'm as a general rule – I think this is what – is this like the fifth invasion angle within WWE alone? Like ECW twice, Nexus, SmackDown last year, NWO, this one. So what is that, like six?
And they, I remember when Eddie passed, they had a Raw and SmackDown invasions back and forth.
Yeah. So, like, I'm kind of bored with that angle.
Yeah.
That's one of the things, actually, again, like, I would have preferred for them to say, okay, NXT is taking part and NXT wants to establish themselves and show that they're as good and there's something on the line for the performers where they'll get a big money bonus or something like that to win. And that reason to put aside their differences and work for the brand. And like I would have preferred that, like a kind of a slow build rather than another invasion angle. Like I said, I'm kind of sick of them. I mean, it's been a long, like there's been only a few good ones. Obviously the original NWO in WCW, ECW invading Mid-South. They couldn't work together, so it didn't last long. The best one ever was CZW invading ROH. If you're not familiar with that feud, you should go back and watch it. It was incredible. And one of the reasons why it works is because these are real, like CZW was a real company that didn't like the fact that ROH, that their home base was Philadelphia, did not like the fact that ROH was constantly running in Philadelphia in the old ECW arena. And ROH was a technical high-flying style, and CZW was a hardcore style. So the invasion and the angle and the booking, and they had to politically overcome it, but it felt real. It worked. It was incredible. You know, you had guys like Samoa Joe versus the Necro Butcher, one guy representing ROH, one guy representing CCW. I got off on a tangent there. Sorry. So it can work. Like if I'm Tony Khan and I can get four or five guys and make it seem like WWE is invading, I probably do that. If Randy Orton is the head, if Randy Orton's not the head, then I just let the guys come in another way. But if Randy Orton can be your leader and make it seem like he's leading an invasion, you know, and the fact that he has his real name and it is his real name and can keep it would be really helpful. I think I would definitely do that angle personally.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's a terrible idea at all. And as a matter of fact, I think if you can get Randy Orton, even if it's for a year, I think you could maximize the potential with Randy Orton. And you would elevate other guys around you. And if Randy's having fun and he's like, hey, I'm going to stick around and do some more for you guys, then that's icing on the cake for you.
I actually don't think Randy would have any problem putting anybody over.
Nope, I don't think so.
I actually don't think he would. So that's another reason why I think it could work.
It's going to be very interesting to see because his contract is up in the middle of next year. And if he brings a few guys along with him, and that could be a long-term angle that could absolutely help AEW take that step.
It's frankly another reason for AEW to work things out with New Japan, because New Japan, and tell you the truth, that's really more on New Japan than it is on AEW. They're the ones who were disrespectful to AEW when they wanted to form a friendship and a partnership at the beginning. But yeah, it's another reason to, because, you know, we all want to see Randy Orton versus Ospreay.
Yes. Why do you feel that they were disrespectful to?
No, that is what happened. AEW came to them and said, you know, we're doing this. We want to work with you, and New Japan blew them off like they weren't at their level. New Japan only had respect for Kenny, didn't want to lose him, were mad that he was leaving, didn't care about the Bucks, because the Bucks really weren't big stars in Japan. Not as big as they were in the States. They really were, you know, they were junior tag team people. And they basically completely blew them off. Said, no, we're good with ROH, and acted like they were small time.
Yeah, I think
that's where this whole thing started.
That's a mistake. Absolutely a mistake.
Well, it's clearly a mistake now that you can see the you know, AEW's the strength they already have. And like I said, they're going to grow, because when you're a 50-year-old guy like WWE's crowd, like you're 50, like you say you're 53 years old, and you're watching WWE and it gets great. It just gets great. And you turn to your friends and call your other friends who are also 50 and say, it's great, you should watch it. You know what they'll say? Nah, I'm good. But if you're a 20-year-old and you're watching AEW and say it's new and it's great, you should watch it. You know what they'll say? Yeah, I might check that out. That's one of the reasons why I really believe that AEW's growth is much stronger, is because I believe that the crowd that they're connecting to has a much greater chance to get their friends in to watch.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. This brings up another point, because you talked about the younger generation. Apparently, AEW's demographics, we're now all becoming experts on ratings and the demos and what they mean. It's fascinating to watch online.
It's a big part of the story.
So the women's demo for the certain for the younger age plummeted for AEW and went up for NXT against the World Series. Does that matter at all long term, or is that just a blip on the radar?
I think that's a blip. I think that's a blip. Yeah.
Because there were people making a big deal out of it, being like, see, the women's division in AEW is so weak that they're not drawing, and the women's division in NXT.
Let me tell you something. Recently, that show that WWE did where they didn't have one woman on was the strongest among women for a long time. I do not believe women are watching wrestling because they want to watch other women. I believe more of them are watching because they want to see guys they think are hot.
I don't disagree with you. I think that's actually really interesting. Yeah, I think you're spot on with that.
Yeah, it's you often see it when they put women in the main event. Women in Raw, historically, women viewers turn off.
That's interesting. I'm very curious to see what that where those numbers go. It is fun to watch these numbers and see where they go.
It's fascinating, track. Like you say, to speculate right now.
So we're gonna hit on the negative side, and then I want to close the show out with talking about power struggle from New Japan. But I want to talk to you about Mercury in Retrograde, who is Joey Mercury on Twitter, who has parted ways with Ring of Honor and just aired a ton of dirty laundry for AEW. So I'm going to run through some of the stuff.
All right.
Mercury accuses Ring of Honor of providing unsafe work environments for talent, pointing out no security and no medical staff, no women on creative, and worst-looking wrestling on or off TV. Claims Shane Taylor will not be re-signed on January 1st, but Taylor has not been informed of this decision. Accuses Gilland, who I believe is the GM or guy in charge of Ring of Honor, for not taking proper care of Jay Lethal after his arm was broken during the Honor United tour. Reveals why ROH's relationship with Alex Shelley had fallen apart, and that the reason that it fell apart was because Alex Shelley was providing medical care behind the scenes for guys. He's a certified athletic trainer because they wouldn't hire doctors. So he would provide medical for guys, and he Bandino and someone else flipped Gordon's elbow back into place because no doctors. That tells you a lot. We're going to keep going along here. There was no proper concussion protocols within Ring of Honor, and it was revealed that they allowed Kelly Klein to travel to South Africa, or they asked Kelly Klein to travel to South Africa to wrestle despite having a brain injury, a concussion. Let me look. Hypothetically says the contracts of Taylor and Bandino expire on January 1st, while PJ Black's contract expires February 1st. And if you recall the fan incident between Bully Ray and the fan, he basically said ROH has no security and put Bully Ray in that position. There were a few other comments that I saw online. From everything that I've gathered, that Kelly Klein has more or less confirmed what was said. It was revealed that she asked for a 4 or 5 grand pay increase, and Gilliland basically said, "Well, if we pay you that, then we have to pay all the women that, and we just don't want to do that." So that's another thing. Ring of Honor took a ton of flack for everything coming out. I saw a few comments of people saying they've gone to Ring of Honor shows, and if you didn't have a ticket, you could have probably just walked into the thing because they had no security for these events. It was very lackadaisy and very poorly run. But we've had this conversation on this podcast before with you, and you have said Sinclair will keep Ring of Honor going because it's cheaper. But where does this put Ring of Honor, especially with the market in professional wrestling in America getting tighter?
Well, when we say that they'll keep it going because it's cheap programming for them, if the negative press got bad enough and big enough, and this isn't it, but if it did get bad enough and big enough, then they could very likely, that's when they would look to shut it down. If lawsuits started happening, if it became something that got more national exposure, what was happening with this company that Sinclair owned it, these are the type of things that they could, possibly change it. I'm not sure how much of that is true, obviously.
Yeah.
It's just one side. I think probably if even 50% of it is true, and I think that's probably very likely that at least 50% is, then it's pretty damning stuff, honestly.
If I'm a performer and I hear this and I believe that even 50% of this could be true, I'm not going to want to work for Ring of Honor.
No.
You have no concussion protocol, no medical. So if I get hurt, I'm SOL.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not the way I want to operate. I'd much rather go somewhere where at least I know if I'm going to get hurt, there's at least someone that I can see.
Yeah, I don't know if they have downside guarantees to their contracts. Like, I'm not privy to that. I'm not sure. I would think it seems inconceivable they wouldn't. But, actually, come to think of it, I remember one time listening to Joe Koff on I think it was on Meltzer or something like that. And he said that, he had wanted to bring the people in. It's very important to get the guys booked all the time. They're trying to make a living, which makes me think that they're probably not making money unless they get a shot, unless they're, if they're not getting that shot, then they're not getting paid. Which is kind of, again, this day and age, a little scary to think of, quite honestly.
Yeah.
That an organization, and I know ROH isn't full of money, but Sinclair is.
Yeah.
And the idea that, like, the one where I go, well, there's no women on creative, I'm like, well, that's pretty much true most places. Yeah. Even WWE has almost nobody, female on creative.
Dana Warrior.
Sort of. So I like that one, I would throw out, but a lot of this other stuff, is, it's just not right. Not a good look on ROH.
Now, I don't think any of this matters, but does, with New Japan of America launching eventually, and just after everything that happened with the MSG show, especially on the Ring of Honor side, how much longer do you think New Japan puts up with Ring of Honor's bullshit?
Well, the Japanese are fiercely loyal.
That's
been a thing with New Japan. So I think that, you know, I doubt this stuff, to be honest with you, has in any way, shape, or form actually, affected the. I don't think it's in the media in Japan, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's negatively affecting their public relations or their you know. If it did, that's when they would, you know, make a change. That's when it'd be enough for them. I don't think they're at that point. So I mean, I think the bigger thing is that whole, you know, when New Japan America comes up, which sounds to me like a mistake the way they're doing it, anyways. But I just don't see where's the advantage for either company to keep working together. It has to become a more, you know, it's competition. Like they're competing for the same audience in the same country. Then how much of an advantage is it for New Japan? Because there's a bigger advantage for Ring of Honor to get New Japan stars than for New Japan to get Ring of Honor stars.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's going to be interesting. I just can't see them working together forever. But I don't think it's because of ROH's bullshit that it'll happen. I think it'll be more. I think we're all hoping. Like I hate to say it, but we're all sitting there thinking this Ring of Honor thing can't end fast enough for me so that I can watch AEW work with New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I think everyone's wanting that. I think if you can have it where Kenny has the title and his next challenger, all you hear is the coin drop, and out comes Okada, or you have Ibushi, even just having Ishii chase Moxley around again, like there's a lot of things you could do.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That would be worth it for both parties to contribute to. And I think you could have it where it's a 50-50 split on working on stuff and make the best for both your rosters. And speaking of New Japan, they had Power Struggle and a few things happened on there. We've touched on one thing, the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla, the Painmaker, and all his clown makeup beat up a bunch of Tanahashis. And sent out the challenge, which Tanahashi accepted. So we've got a match for January 5th. We also had Kenta beat Ishii, and Kenta attacked Shibata again. You gotta kind of wonder where they're going with these constant attacks on Shibata.
At this point, it becomes more than a tease if you don't pay it off.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to get heat the first time. It was just to get heat, it looked like. Now it is more than that. Now, if you don't pay it off, it's a epic fail.
Yeah, absolutely. You absolutely need to do something to pay this off. Like, you can't mess around.
No.
Like, it is time. You've teased it enough. You got to give something at the Tokyo Dome. Will Ospreay beat Bushi, and then he had a time bomb go off.
And yeah, that's awesome.
Hiromu Takahashi is back. He licked the title, and him and Will hugged in the ring, and they are going to do battle at Wrestle Kingdom. And I'm super excited for that match.
I hope that Hiromu is back to being what he was. If you know, yeah. it's been a hell of a long time, and it was a scary injury and just a freak thing, but. You know, I want to see him, and and Ospreay so bad, and I also want to see him and Franklin and Dragon Lee again.
Yeah, I do. I think there's plenty of stuff. I think he'll probably beat Ospreay. I genuinely believe that. And then you can have him versus Shingo. Or Shingo's moved up to the heavyweight, so you can't have that. Shingo's now a heavyweight, is he not?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think he moved up after the G1, which I'm really happy for because I really like Shingo. He was one of my favorite parts of the G1. And Jay White retained his IWGP Heavyweight Championship.
I don't think anybody expected Goto to beat him.
No. I'm looking here. I thought I saw something kind of set up for the end of Power Struggle. It may have been a previous show where it had Okada, Ibushi, Jay White, and Naito kind of all in the ring together. And basically basically the interpretation I took from it was a double champion at the end of this two-night Wrestle Kingdom event. Is that fair to say, or am I off base there?
No, I think you're on. I think that sounds right.
So I imagine Naito will face Jay White, and Okada will face Ibushi, mm-hmm. and then the winner of those two matches will face off. Who? Early prediction. We're almost 2 months away exactly to the day for at least night one. If they do the double champ, who's the double champ at the end of the night?
If I'm to guess, Naito. At this point, that's my pick at this point. But who knows? But I think I very much the company. You would think it would be with, considering who they are and how they book him. You know, you obviously think it's going to be Okada, but I have this sneaking feeling it's going to be Naito. Now, that said, I wonder, because I actually think this is one of the things that actually hurts New Japan, is the fact that their title is the IWGP title instead of the New Japan, and that this would be a way to make a brand new title that is branded for the company. Because I think internationally, I just don't think it plays in territories outside of Japan to have that title be, you know, international wrestling, whatever it is.
Yeah, I love the title. I love the look. I love that I got to see live and it defended live and in person in Madison Square Garden.
Don't change the look.
No.
Keep the main look. Unless you want to give it eagle wings, that'd be cool too.
I'd absolutely agree with you. I have a feeling as well that it's Naito. I can see Okada. I could also see Jay White, but just the run Jay White had with the title, that short run, and kind of it seemed like the heat that was in New Japan cooled off considerably. Maybe they want to give it another kick at the can and have him stand tall, but I think that with the limited window that he reportedly has now, and just kind of the reports on Naito's health and just his father saying, how long can you keep doing this? I do think Naito winning makes sense.
Yeah, I just got this sneaking suspicion, you know, that this is the guy that has never that he's never stood tall in the main event of the Tokyo Dome at the end as the winner and the champion. He's never had that moment. And if this isn't that moment, he won't have that moment. And it just feels to me like he should or will have that moment. So
I absolutely agree. He gets revenge on Jay the first night. Who do you have win, Ibushi or Okada? No, it has to be Okada because that's the story, Okada and Naito.
I think that is the story, but it's, you know, I think you can wait one more year to have Ibushi win and stand tall, but I think that also has to happen. I kind of have a feeling, like, I'm pretty sure they're going to, yes, they'll go with, you know, they'll probably go with Okada. I would go with Ibushi. Especially this year, Ibushi and Naito has been a lot more prominent.
Yeah, and they have almost died a few times. They've definitely almost died. those that's a dangerous combination. I would tend to – I think regardless of what you get, the end of January 5th, it'll be the talk of the wrestling world. I think New Japan has cooled off a little bit right now in just terms of news, but it always cools off after the G1.
It always cools off after the G1, and I know I'm burned out of the G1. That said, I know what they've been doing here lately has me, the last few days has me going, man, I'm pretty excited by it. And, you know, I actually have been looking forward to the tag team tournament for a while. Not the junior one they just had, but the heavyweight one that's upcoming.
Oh, yes. I'm looking forward to New Japan cranking back up. And I mean, we're getting closer and closer to our end of the year podcast, and New Japan will be very much heavily featured in that podcast.
Oh, no question.
I've been doing a lot of thinking the last couple of days on my picks right now. I've got a few ones. I think I got a few off the board, but,
I often do. I think so. Though, hey, one more thing I got to say, I got to get this off my chest. Remember who my pick for babyface of the year was last year?
Who was it?
Kairi Sane.
Yeah.
Straight up, is Vince McMahon just a racist as well? Like,
well, you mentioned that, and then we had some breaking news. Well, not breaking news, but if you've been caught up on the ACH Jordan Miles story, he sent out a tweet about 2 hours ago saying, if WWE doesn't reach out to me by tomorrow, I'll make sure my voice and my movement will be heard for the culture. So you mentioned racists.
Well, there you go. Certainly that one looks bad on, you know, I mean, WWE needs to make, like, they need a fresh, you know, person in charge of creative. And Paul Heyman, frankly, as much as I respect him, isn't the person. I don't believe Triple H is the person. I think you need somebody under 40.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why AEW and Tony Khan has worked so far, because Tony Khan's not an old man.
I think their booking is young. And so I think the thing is, NXT booking is really, really strong. And, you know, I mean, so you look at that in Triple H and you think that'd be great. But truthfully, it's also going backwards. It's very old style booking, whereas AEW's booking feels very forward thinking. And I think that's why they need to take somebody. Like, when you look at it, when you look at Gabe Sapolsky when he was winning Booker of the Year, when you look at Jim Cornette when he was running Smoky Mountain and people were raving about his booking, when you look at Paul Heyman in ECW, he was like 26. You know,
that's my age.
Yeah, like
that's
like,
crazy.
Yeah, like I think he was like 26 when he first took over. You know, I mean, Cornette was in his mid 20s. Sapolsky was in his late 20s, and I think that's what WWE needs. I think WWE needs somebody between the ages of 28 to 40. I think you would look at a guy on the roster and try and find the person with the best mind and the best who pays the most attention and find that person who's younger and try and put together something fresh and exciting. And I think it needs to be somebody brand new. And I think the ideal person would be, well, I think there's two people. I think it's either Daniel Bryan or Cassius Ohno. I think those are your two guys who are probably the most in tune to modern wrestling and study it the most and creatively could be fresh, new, great bookers. I would love to see that. But so anyways, because the guys they have now, if you're a foreigner, you're going to be a heel, odds are, always. Always. But even if you're from like Switzerland, which, you know, is nobody thinks is evil. But if you're Japanese, no matter how incredibly popular you are as a babyface, Vince McMahon looks at you and says, well, look how popular they are as a babyface. They'll be even more more over as heels because everybody hates the Japanese, right, pal? Doesn't it feel like that?
We have seen
numerous times over the years, Japanese performers that are popular, and they just look at them and turn them there. And they did it here with Nakata or Shinsei Nakamura. They did it with Nakamura. They did it with Asuka here and Kairi Sane. They would do it with anybody else. Like that's just yeah. Even Kenta, you know.
Yeah, but just, Kenta's a heel in Japan has worked really well, but
it's different. It's
foreign heel. Yeah.
Yeah, it's different. It's because it's the right thing for the character. Whereas with Vince, it's just because he's a when it comes to Japanese people, especially, he seems like a racist to me.
Yeah, there's a long history in WWE that very well supports that mindset.
Nakamura should not be a heel. Hell no. Kairi Sane and Asuka should not be heels. And you know what? Riho's not a heel, thank God. You think it can't work? Just wait till you see how big she becomes.
Oh yeah. Oh, believe me, I think she's a tremendous talent. I think that how do you pronounce her name? She wrestled.
I can't remember her name either. But she was on this last week.
I think she's a great star. I think the woman that she faced from France, I think, is a great star. Not to that level. I think she'd be good. Another good hand to add to the women's division. And if I'm AEW, I am going to throw a boatload of money at Tessa the minute her contract's up. Because to me, the little that I've seen from her with Impact, she's a fucking star.
She is a star. I think WWE is going to throw a lot of money at her too. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. But hey, you know, I mean, Tully's there.
Tully's traveling there. Together. Tully and Tessa were traveling, so.
You know, Tully's there. I think that's, you know, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, that, oh man, that would be great. I have a sneaking feeling she goes to WWE, but I'm hoping I'm wrong.
Yeah, I have a sneaking feeling she does too, but there's going to be definitely some interesting contracts. The idea that they're not going to re-sign Shane Taylor is insane, considering his whole gimmick right now is that he's without a contract and they don't want to sign him, but he's the belt. They can't get the belt off of him. And he's, you know, he's your current TV champion. The idea that they wouldn't re-sign him is nuts. But whatever.
The world of professional wrestling is a very weird place.
Hell yes, it is. Hell yes, it is.
I think that's the end of our show. I think we've covered every major thing that has happened. And as I said, the end of the year, we will be doing our end of the year show for sure. And I'm sure that there'll be more crazy busy weeks in professional wrestling. Mo, thank you for coming on. Any final thoughts before we
Yeah, Full Gear, man. I can't wait.
I think I've already set up a small little viewing party for that with a couple friends.
No, seriously, who are these people you're going to spend time with?
They're people from work.
Okay. Well, then they probably have to be polite and like you.
it's crazy because all the reviews I get from just casual wrestling fans is AEW's awesome.
Hey, AEW in Canada, is drawing great ratings, better than Raw or better than SmackDown. Not as good as Raw, but better than SmackDown.
I'm excited. I love what TSN has done up here because it just feels like they're constantly promoting it. From the lower third little graphic that they keep for the Sports Center shows that they do, to the commercials, just I feel like this show has been so hyped for TSN. I feel like it's done well. And
you know
what?
The thing you got to keep in mind, Dave Meltzer always said this. What gets over in the United States was what was over 3 to 5 years earlier in Japan. And AEW is bringing a lot of that, you know, and getting over in North America and in Canada as well. Right. So, yeah, it's not 100% like New Japan, but there's a lot of that.
Yeah. And I think with more fine tuning, I think that they're going to continue to build a better foundation, and they're just going to keep on running.
And just one last thing, because I know we said the show was over, but one last thing. You know what I've been thinking about recently a lot was when Vince McMahon and Hunter, but especially Vince, was on the Stone Cold podcast on the network. And Stone Cold asked him about writers and asked him about just letting guys cut promos. And Vince McMahon's response was, well, the business has changed. The business has changed. That's why we have writers now. The business has changed. And there was something to that. I mean, they had writers. TNA had writers. WCW had writers for a lot of the end. So I guess the business had changed. But now we see, no, the business hasn't changed. Because for 5 weeks, I've watched a product that has no writers. And there's not one time when I thought, boy, if they had a writer, this would have been better. Not one time. They just don't need writers. You don't need writers in wrestling. And if the business hasn't changed, WWE changed. And if you wanted to, you could change it back for the better. And clearly they don't want to.
Yeah. I mean, you look at that Moxley promo.
Yeah, so good. Because it felt like he was saying it. And that's the difference.
It's so weird to think you saw Dean Ambrose in January, and at the end of the year, you're going to see Jon Moxley. And they almost feel like two completely different people.
And hey, I know somebody who was watching AEW, and his wife looked at him and said, who's that? And he goes, that's Jon Moxley. And she said, oh, he looks like Dean Ambrose. But for me, I don't even think of him as Ambrose anymore. Like, when I think of him, he's Moxley.
Yep, he's officially transitioned in my vocabulary to Moxley. Like, it's Moxley. And even when I'm talking about stuff that he did in WWE, I refer to him as Moxley.
As Moxley, exactly.
It's just ingrained in my memory now. But thanks for coming on, Mo.
Now we can call it a night.
Yeah, I think we had a solid show, covered everything that's been happening. And,
well, I was good.
I thought you were okay. You were like, nah, I probably would have got 3 stars in the Tokyo Dome, but, you know, what can you do? Nothing? Okay. Well, nothing. I'm going to sign off.
I'm not going to, yeah. No sense in burying you further and you just buried yourself.
we're going to ski on Daddle, and we'll be back hopefully next week with more wrestling talk, and especially a preview of Full Gear, which should be an exciting show, and I'm sure we'll have plenty to bury about WWE.
Because you don't think there's going to be lots to talk about? Hey, we never even got into how angry I was that Lesnar just quit. Because the draft means something. And all this means something. And the guy just quit. Like, why doesn't everybody just quit? Stupid company.
I think that's the note we'll end on. So, stupid company indeed, Mo. Thanks for coming on, and we'll be back again.
And good night, Ben!